Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast. And we're continuing our series where we're talking to our therapists so you can get to know them a little bit better. And today we have Birgit Schoell with us. So welcome to the program, Birgit.
Hi, Brett. I'm so glad I can be here.
We're happy to have you. I like to start with the question about your background, and yours is a little bit unique. So tell us a little bit about your background, your journey, and what led to you working in wilderness therapy.
Absolutely. Yeah, so I'm from Germany, from a city called Augsburg. It's in southern Germany. It's 2,000 years old. It's absolutely beautiful with lots of history. You can still see remainders from the Roman time and just absolutely beautiful. I am married. I have two children. And I had my first career actually in business. Mm-hmm. I worked for BMW for about 3 years in marketing and for the motorsport department. And yeah, then I went on my own journey, kind of like finding myself. And I grew up, my parents had businesses and, you know, I wanted to be a businesswoman. I wanted to make them proud and wanted to be really successful as I was watching them work really hard. And then there came a time in my life where I was thinking, you know, is this what I want to do? Do I want to be in business? And then I went on this journey. I spent some time in Africa. I did a year of missions and then realized I want to work with people. I much rather invest my time and energy into relationships. And then I went back to school for my master's, in psychology. And so This was 20 years ago. I started working with adolescents in Germany in different capacities, different programs. I worked at a psych clinic for youth. And so I've been doing this for quite a while.
Now, I know this might be a strange question, but I'm curious about it. When working with adolescents in Germany and working with adolescents in the United States, what are some of the differences or maybe some of the similarities that kind of jump out at you when you think about the two cultures?
Yeah, it's amazing. Well, there is quite a difference, I would say, just in terms of how we approach therapy in Germany. I would say there's more of a stigma where people doing therapy, I think there's more reluctance and parents will seek help when the kid is really struggling. When I worked at the psych clinic, that was the crisis and intervention station. Mm-hmm. And I had this experience right in the beginning where we had this girl that had been in therapy for a long time because she was suicidal. She had suicidal ideation. She strongly believed that she didn't want to live anymore, and therapy didn't seem effective. Like, she was in the hospital for a while, and nothing seemed to shift. And one day we took her climbing, and as she was high up on top of this tree, she got scared of falling down. Mm. And it was this experience of like, wait a second, why am I afraid of falling down? I thought I don't want to live anyways. And it was this experience that shifted something in her brain of like, wait a second, I do want to live. And everything changed from that moment on. And for me, it was this aha moment. Like, that's what we need to do. We need to do more experiential stuff. And so I started digging into it. And, you know, it may sound kind of silly because here in America, wilderness therapy has been around. It's quite known in the industry. There's lots of different programs. It's just not the case in Europe. It's not the case in Germany. So I started doing my own research and even wrote my thesis on this. Like, how can you combine or bring healing to trauma through experiential education or experiential therapy? And as I was doing my research, I found wilderness therapy in America, and it was like this jewel, like this amazing discovery. And even, you know, my professors said there's no work being done. Like, there was nothing in my school where people were looking at that. And so that was the beginning of my journey, really finding something that's really special in Europe because we don't have it. And so that's kind of what brought me over to America. You know, I once I graduated, I flew over, I found evoke in my research as one of the world top leaders. And so I thought, I'm going to give this a shot. I'm going to come over here and see if I can get my foot in the door. And that was the beginning of my journey.
Lucky for us, you found it. What is it about Evoke? You researched more than one program. You have now a broader knowledge of wilderness therapy. So for you, from your perspective, what makes Evoke special and unique?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so my journey started in 2006. And when I came here, I needed a visa, and I worked with Evoke back then, and I became a field staff. And I had to make this commitment for 18 months. I had no idea what I was getting myself into. But here I was with my master's degree, and I was so impressed, even as a field staff, how intentional we were about everything. So as a field staff, I would go out for 8 days at a time, and your week would start with a clinical in-service, a clinical training from the therapist. And then you set your goals. And then you have these feedback sessions with staff that had been there longer. And I was just so blown away by the intention and how we approach our students and our therapy, and just going into the week, I felt, like I want to push myself. And I set goals, and I got evaluated each week. And so even from the beginning on, I was impressed with the way the system was being set up, and even the demands of a field staff, like the knowledge and the training that goes into that. I felt like I learned more in these trainings than what I did in school, even in Germany.
Right, right. I think that was the first thing that, when I think back to when I started in wilderness, the thing that I noticed first was the field staff and how impressive, open, vulnerable, courageous, strong, creative they were. And I've felt that. And what we've added, of course, is the clinical training. So I see that. And when you talk about getting evaluated every week, there's such a great culture of feedback and growth that gets modeled by the staff. It can't help but translate into work, the work that they do with kids. Tell us a little bit about, for a new parent. I mean, you said this is widely known, but for some people, they don't know much about it. So when a parent sends their child to the wilderness in the beginning, what would you say to them? What can they expect?
Yeah, sending your child away as a mom, I can understand how terrifying that can be. My kids are still very young, but I'm joking with my husband quite often. We better get ready. Like one day we may have to send our kid away, especially this time of the year in Oregon. It's winter. I hear lots of concerns in the beginning. Are they okay? How cold is it? And I think it's important to understand, and I take great comfort in this, because I was a field staff and I've been out there in the winter. We have systems in place and we've been doing this for a long time. So just kind of easing the fears in the beginning of the environment. To me, wilderness is the safest place. It's also absolutely beautiful. I mean, Oregon is just gorgeous. Our field area, in the summertime, we have wild mustangs that come around, lots of wildlife and trees and creeks and all of that. So it's this beautiful, amazing place where I feel like the therapy that takes place is a lot more natural and gentle versus being, in an inside of like a treatment facility or a hospital or anything like that. But then I think the separation, sending your kid away and not being able to text and, are you okay or what's going on? I think that's a process that also parents have to adjust to. But what I have noticed, lots of students come here and the relationship with the parents is strained or there's a breakdown in communication. Right now I'm having a student that just said to me this week, and he said this to the entire group, he said, I haven't really been talking to my dad in years. We've had so many differences. And now through the visit and the phone calls and the letter writing, I feel closer to him than ever before. So what I'm noticing is just the relationships. Parents are actually getting closer with the kids rather than feeling more distant. Okay. And that's just the beauty to me in wilderness that I see over and over again. And that's a process that I encourage my students to engage in, you know, to really address some of the hard stuff and the conflicts and the things that's difficult to talk about.
Right. Yeah, I don't think a lot of people would expect that. I think that that would come as a surprise to them, does come as a surprise to many of the parents. So what kind of a client is a Birgit client? What are the types of clients that you work with?
Yeah, so I work with adolescent boys. I get students sometimes that have been in therapy for years, maybe even they've been to different programs, or I get a student where I'm sitting down with them and it's their first therapy session ever. My approach is that I always want to be curious about my clients and assume nothing. A lot of them, I would say, struggle with depression, anxiety, some anger issues, maybe even substance use. I have addiction is one of my specialties. Mm-hmm. My husband is in recovery. And so that's a topic that hits very close to home. I do integrate a lot of recovery components, even from AA. We do like a daily 10-step for people who are not familiar. It's just kind of like taking inventory of your day, making amends, stating something that you did really well, setting goals for the next day. And I like doing these components of recovery to get the students familiar with just kind of like the language and getting familiar with even programs like AA so they can seek out that kind of support when they leave wilderness. I would say my clients or my students often struggle with identity issues, even body image. I think it's still in our society kind of like this belief that it's a thing that mostly girls struggle with. Right. And I think almost all of my boys at some time during their stay, you know, will acknowledge or talk about struggling with the way they look and feeling like they're not enough or don't have enough muscles or are not athletic enough, even to a point of eating disorders. And I think that is something that a lot of guys struggle with opening up about. I get guys that are really athletic. They're on the basketball team or on the football team and talking about how they feel about their body or even restricting food or overeating at times. I've noticed that that's a really, like there's an increase in that. And I think there needs to be more awareness in general. And then I think lots of anger that's being expressed and feedback they have gotten, like, why are you so angry, even like from parents or in school, and then noticing or realizing that the anger is just kind of like a mask, especially for young men in the society, you know, wanting to come across as strong or as tough. I think anger is a common expression for more difficult emotions that are underneath that. And I had a kid in my group this week saying, hey, I've noticed in this new student's letter that he was acting out a lot more towards his mom, and I'm doing the same. I don't know why. I love my mom, but I'm taking my emotions out on her much more than my dad. Can I run a group on that? Can we talk about that? And so I think that's a very common theme between, you know, young men and their moms, and like, why is it that I'm more aggressive or feel more safe to just take things out on her?
Right. That's fascinating. I know you've worked with adolescents for many years. What would you say are some of the trends that you've noticed, or what are some of the challenges that you see teens mostly struggling with these days?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, I can't help but notice the electronics and the social media and how that is impacting this generation. It's called the iGen generation. So adolescents that are growing up with the smartphone. And I do believe that that has really impacted this generation. I'm noticing it a lot just when they first come in and, you know, they have to hand in their phones. I think that's really difficult for them. It has become such a crutch to always feel connected to your friends in that way. And even though technology can be extremely helpful and can make life a lot easier and more convenient, I see and I believe that there's a real connection to this increase of depression and anxiety that we see in this generation. And there's even some data from the Department of Human Health and Services that's kind of backing that up, where since the first iPhone has come out in 2007, and just the increase in depression and anxiety especially has gone up. And so I do believe, so this trend of, you know, being connected to technology, coming to the wilderness and having to give that up is a big challenge for them, because it somehow gives you this illusion, you know, I can be on social media, I am connected, I have a community. You can sit in your bedroom utterly alone and yet feel like, you know, I have my friends right here. And it gives us this sense, or gives them the sense of like this independence or individualism where we don't need each other as much anymore. And for the students these days, I hear a lot of statements where they say, you know, I'm just going to do my own thing. I don't need my parents. They isolate. They don't participate in family activities. You know, and they just sit in the bedrooms on their phones and they feel like, you know, I have my friends right here. And I'm noticing that's a real challenge for them, because they do feel lonely. I would say more lonely than like 15 years ago. Kids struggle with that because they do not know how to truly connect on a deeper level. And that's the kind of work that we do in the wilderness, where you have these face-to-face interactions and learning to deal with conflict and talking to each other and not just, you know, on your phone.
Right. I've heard it said lately that being unplugged, being offline is kind of the new luxury, that's the time in our lives, all of us really, and we didn't grow up with it, but we live in it, that time when we're really unplugged, when we don't have to answer to the ding or the ring of a smartphone is really a special time. And I think wilderness is more relevant now than ever because of this immersion into electronics and social media and so forth. So I think it's really powerful. What do you hope the students are going to get out of wilderness when they come? What do you hope that they're going to gain from their time with you?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, I would hope that they get really excited about this process of self-growth, self-awareness. Most of them, when they come in, I would say the vast majority, they don't want to be here. It's like, gosh, why do I have to be here? And so many times, Brad, you wouldn't believe it. It's like by the time it's you know, they come to the end of their wilderness day, some of them, they even say, I don't want to go. Like, yeah. I'm going to run. If the truck pulls up, I'm going to resist. I'm not going to get into the truck, because it is so incredibly empowering. And, you know, when they come in and they say, I can't do this. I can't be away from my family. I cannot be away from home or from my phone. I'm missing out too much. And then towards the end, it's like they want to come back. They don't want to leave because they have created these amazing bonds with other peers or even staff, but most of it, I would say, with themselves. And that's my hope, that they can go out and learn to face life. I think increased stress tolerance is one of the main results that I see what happens in wilderness. Like I said in the beginning, they think, I cannot do this. And then by the end, they're exercising this muscle, because wilderness and nature, you know, you can have a day, you cannot control what the weather is going to be like, or maybe someone else in the group is saying something, or they're getting a message from home, and it's learning how to deal with these challenges or even stressors, and learning how to struggle, not to ever struggle again, but learning how to struggle and knowing that, you know, if you've gone through wilderness, you've gone through you know, these various times of maybe hard days or missing a girlfriend or something like that, that you can do whatever life is going to throw at you. So that is my hope, that they will see or look at this like a journey that is going to continue. That's why we always say, you know, you are transitioning out of wilderness. It's not like, okay, now you're done. You're done. Like, right. You're done with therapy. It's just another step. So that is my hope, that they will continue on that path. But then also, you know, last year I got trained in brain spotting, and that's a wonderful technique, I believe, especially for males, where it doesn't require a lot of talking. And, you know, when they do come in and they have struggled significantly, just the process of healing and symptom reduction, that not having certain struggles anymore, that is for sure my hope, that they can, you know, go home and struggle less with some of the, you know, the stuff that they came in with.
Right, right. So you're a mother. How old are your children?
They are 4 years and 7 years old.
So I guess I'm curious about how either being a therapist working with adolescents has impacted your parents, or maybe even how having children now, how that's impacted the work that you do, not just with the kids that you work with, but also with their parents. Kind of, can you talk about a little bit about that, about the impact that both of those roles have had on you and each other?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, you know, I've been doing this for a while, and I'm noticing more and more that, you know, everything that I coach, everything that I teach parents on the phone, the way that I show up, even with the students in the field or with my own kids, that I'll make mistakes. Like, it's parenting is, there's no perfect way of doing it. And I think I'm more and more aware, the more I know, the less I know, that I'm falling short and I am not the perfect parent. I'm, you know, hurting my own children. I'm impatient, especially at their age. That's just constant fighting in the home, or just getting them ready, you know, for school. Even this morning, as I was preparing for this interview, my four-year-old had a meltdown, mm-hmm. and really wanted me to stay there. And I was the only one who was allowed to get her dressed. And so I'm just noticing that the longer I'm doing this work, that, you know, being okay with not getting it right all the time is okay.
Right.
And then, yes, this morning my little one told me, "You were not happy yesterday. I was cooking and trying to get things done, and I was impatient. You were not happy. Can you please be happy?" And they're such good teachers, my kids are, to remind me that, yeah, the way I show up with them, like, my own emotions, my stress impacts them.
Right.
And I think doing this work in the field, even with our students, I think that's one of the main things I tell parents. I tell them about my screw-ups and my shortcomings, because the more we can embrace those and be not afraid of our shortcomings, I think the more authentic we can show up with our kids. And I tell my own kids constantly, "Oh gosh, I'm so sorry. You're right. Like, I was impatient. I was unhappy. I'm so sorry." You know, and so in a way, my own awareness is definitely increasing and showing me that I have ways to go. And in a way, it's also refreshing, because I'm human. I am imperfect, and that is okay.
Right.
And that's part of the process. I think parents, they love, and they come here, all the resources, even watching your webinars, Brad, and sometimes I'm noticing them having this pressure of like, what if I say something wrong on this phone call? What if I say something wrong in the letter? And I will say, yeah, you will. You will mess it up. You'll make a mistake. And that is okay, because that's part of the process. And I've seen my students in the field, them, like, the way they respond when parents become authentic and real, and they can just own some of their own shortcomings, that's when I see the most growth in the relational work.
I think that's amazing. There's a saying that I heard not too long ago that said there is such a thing as a perfect parent. They just haven't had children yet. And so I think it is a humbling process. And I think the gift that you give to your parents, I mean, Birgit, your authenticity just oozes out of you, whether it's giving a presentation or when I've accompanied you in the field to watch you do your work with students, clients, your authenticity, even in the most stressful of times. And I've seen some of those with some of the families that you've worked with. It's the one thing that draws people to you and is really, really compelling about you. You know, you have an advantage with the German accent. Whenever my therapist is trying to imitate, her heritage is from Germany. So whenever she's trying to imitate an old-fashioned, smart therapist, she does it with an accent like yours. But you also have with you this nurturing warmth and authenticity that I'm sure all of your families, and I know your clients in the field, appreciate. Tell us a little bit about what you like to do for fun. Besides, I imagine so much of your time is taken up when not at work with children and family. What are the things that you like to do that are self-care or for recreation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's an area of growth for me, because I think naturally I am a caregiver and I love people. So I love investing into them. And I would say I'm really good at that. And I'm not so good investing in myself. And I think that's been mostly the work with my own therapist. And even, you know, taking the time, doing my own work, that's a learning curve for me. And maybe some of the German cultural background, where so much of our identity is by what we do, the career we have. And so that's, you know, self-care is a big one for me. So, but I do, in the time that I take, you know, I do love going swimming, working out, cross-country skiing and skiing, anything that's active. I love traveling. Anytime I can take my family back to Europe, we went to back to Germany last summer, and we went to Italy, and I'm just so proud of where I come from and all the history that's there. So anytime that I get to create adventures and memories with my kids, it just feels like they're growing up so quickly. I like to do that. And then also I have two dogs. One of my dogs comes to the field with me. She's a bearded collie. She's my co-therapist. She's amazing. Sometimes I feel like the boys get more excited to see her than me, but that's okay. But just, yeah, I think family time and going on adventures and, doing fun activities. That's kind of like my thing.
I know you got to go to Germany this year for a couple of weeks, actually. How was that? Was that special?
Yeah, you know, it was amazing. And my dad, next month, it will be the 3-year anniversary of my dad passing away. And it was the first time that I went back last summer without him being there. And it was quite emotional for me. And I was excited about going home, but I was also afraid of what it was going to be like to be there and not have him there. So that was very emotional, I would say. I went to his grave for the first time. I couldn't be there for his funeral. I was there 6 weeks before his passing with my girls, and that was amazing. And I had to come back here. And then 6 days later, he passed. And so it was my first time going back home and kind of just processing more of my own grief. And so that was really powerful. But then it was also an amazing time. Just the beauty, if you ever get the chance to go to Northern Italy, like, it's just one of the most beautiful places on earth, I would say, are there. And then for me to be able to share that with my girls and my husband, kind of like my stomping grounds, that was really, really special. Really special time.
Sounds like it. Well, again, and Birgit, I've had the opportunity to work with you. We got paired together several years ago when a therapist that you were working with was on sabbatical, and I look back and on those times with great gratitude and appreciation for getting to know you back then, and of course all through the years. Thank you for what you bring, like I said, what you bring to our families and to our clients. I am very proud to call myself somebody on the same team as Birgit Show. So I appreciate how you show up in this world and how you show up for your families and your clients. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much, Brad, for your kind words. And I love this work and I love being here. And yeah, thanks everyone for listening.
All right, folks, thanks for joining us today. We hope this is helpful to get to know our staff. And if those of you who have met Birgit, I'm sure you'll take extra joy in listening to her. And for the rest of you, we'll continue with our series with getting to know our therapists and our staff at Evoke Therapy Programs. Take care and talk to you next time. Bye-bye.